Episode 141 of Board Games with Variant Hex is all about our cull of over 60 games. I'm Kelly, and in this episode, Adam and I talk about the games that I donated to a local board game convention. We'll be shooting the breeze and talking about board game collection curation both before and after we share the list of games left the collection. We've gotten to the point where there's far more games that we like than we want to keep, so we'll talk about making those decisions and how we manage our collections. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to Adam and myself talking about collection curation culling.
Now, Kelly, you can tell from the tattoo on the side of my head that I'm a big Usher fan. If you were going to guess my favorite Usher song, it would be You Don't Have to Call.
Oh,
today we're
going
to talk about culling.
Oh, I was just waiting for the opportunity for you to describe what the Usher tattoo on your face was.
Oh, it's obviously from his latest Super Bowl performance. On this side, I've got a whole chronology, starting at Foot with his first album release all the way up. So I'm hoping he doesn't do much else, so I got to go back down.
I know, you're pretty tall, so the planning there, you were sort of expecting a length of career.
The side, work its way down, you know, the left side of me for the rest of his career.
There you go. Yeah. So you're halfway through. He's slowed down.
I think so.
We'll see how it goes.
I don't know. I think he's getting ready to take off, honestly. I feel like a big resurgence is coming.
I haven't seen the Super Bowl thing. I heard about it. I heard there was roller skating. That's about it. So that's still out there for me.
I looked for so long on call references, things that ended in call, by the way. Because there's lots of things that start with call, but that's not as fun to guess because you can't say, like, blank, this Call of the Wild.
Yeah.
Lots of call me maybe. Stuff like
that's where I would have went.
But
it's easy,
ending in call. Not a lot.
I was very close to guessing call, but in my head, I wasn't making the connection as to why that would be the same. Phonetically, sometimes I'm real compartmentalized.
No, that's fair. And I did start off with you having to imagine me with an Usher tattoo on my head. So, you know, that's going to be a bit of a distraction.
Oh,
so.
It sure was.
How could it not? Yeah,
it sure was. So it's been a while since we've done a collection curation episode. On our month in reviews, we always say the collection. And there's a lot of English has some very muddy vowels. So we're doing it on purpose and we're also not helping ourselves. But our collection curation episodes, we usually talk about like just managing your board game collection in one way or another. For the collection that we do every month, we talk about the games that we get rid of. C-U-L-L versus C-O-L-L. And in this collection curation, we're talking about culling. Clear. It's super easy to follow and understand. But it's been a long time since we've done one of those. It's been a while, actually, since you've been on the podcast as well.
It has. Just from lining up of life. I've been busy and you guys have been doing all sorts of stuff.
All sorts of stuff.
But we're here now.
We're here now to talk about what we're getting rid of. And I guess now I've been referencing this on many different episodes. If you're listening to these chronologically, been talking about how there's pile of games by my front door. I even got took a shelf from another part of the house so that they could have a better place to be instead of just it was literally a messy pile stacked up by my front door. I got a 6 foot tall shelf to put these games on. So we're talking about what I'm going to get rid of. And now that it took a while to get to this point, it is springtime. So it is kind of a spring cleaning vibe. And I actually found I had considered selling them, listing them individually somehow, maybe in board game groups, something. And I happened to hear about a local convention, which we've never got. We started at the big one. We started at Gen Con. And we have been going to increasingly smaller conventions ever since. We went to Gen Con. Then we went to PAX Unplugged, which is about half the size. And then we went to Dice Tower West. It's like a tenth the size, maybe, of PAX Unplugged. And now, this weekend, we're not going to be able to go quite as much as we like. There's just life. It's busy. And it's Easter weekend as well. We're going to go to Hoosier Con. It's not spelled how you think. And we're not really thrilled about that. But in any case, it's 2,000 people versus the 3,000 or so at Dice Tower West. So once again, smaller, local. And as we were getting tickets and kind of looking up information about it, because we just saw a flyer around town and then decided to go, because we're like, well, we don't have to buy a plane ticket. We can just drive over.
Right.
We saw that they do, their library takes donations, and then they also have this silent auction something that they do, I think for charity or maybe just for their own fundraising. I have no idea, but I thought, well, I could just give all my games to that, call it a donation, be able to get like good feels points when really I just can't actually see myself getting it together. I've had months to get it together to get these out of the door some other way. That said, let's start a little bit talking about, because it's been a while for collection curation, what games we keep, like the kind of bigger picture of, okay, so you're into board games. You want to have some, but how do you decide how many to actually keep and buy? How many do you just sort of encounter and play whenever you encounter? And then what is like a good number for you based on how you like to play and how often you like to play games?
So I would say I like to have a game in several categories available to me. Now, I like a party game, so I'm going to have several party games available, even though I'm not having a lot of parties. But I want to be able to take it somewhere. I want to be able to lend that out or to play that. I want it on hand. Even once a year I use it, once every other year I use it. That's fine for me. That is a valuable game in my collection. I do want to be able to have one or more solo games at my availability. So like if a game is pretty good solo, I'll hang on to that because I can always play a game with myself. And there are honorary doctorate games, I would call. Like I've given them an honorary doctorate. They will just be in the collection forever. Splendor is one of those games.
Distinguished games.
Right. Like it's there forever. I got that Splendor playmat after looking at it for years. It and stuff. Like things like that where like I've got the special edition nobles for it. Like I'm just gonna keep that game. They're gonna bury me with that game. It's gonna be a permanent collection. Yeah, I still like the old versions of Catan, like the original, like Settlers of Catan and the old boxes. Like I'll have that forever as well. Like just because that's kind of what started it all. So there's those types of games as well. And then past that, I would say from there, it goes into, well, what do I want to play often? And then you do the evaluation of, is it worth keeping it? Is it worth not keeping it if I'm not playing it once, twice, three times a year?
Right. So about how many games in total do you end up keeping? How many are usually in your possession at a given time?
I would say 30 are in my possession, 20 are actually in the list, and then 10 are just floating around like the house.
Like 20 are in, and then the extra 30 is a come and go space.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. You know how it is, like you just end up with games sometimes.
I definitely know how it is.
Absolutely. And
we'll hear that as we continue, because of how many games I'm getting rid of. I think what's also good to compare in this episode, I'm completely different about how many games I have. And there's a couple different reasons why that maybe started and why it's continued. But I now seek to keep the collection at like 300 games. And I could say that really 365 would be the number, because we have this impulse, and really I have the impulse, I'm speaking on behalf of Aaron as well, to play everything yearly, to actually have a collection that's not just sitting and, you know, just kind of sitting static, but to really open up the boxes every year and play it. So with that, there are things that you kind of, as you try to play them every year, there are things that you realize you don't really want to play. Like they kind of fall down to the end of the list. There's things that you play once in the year and then you're like, oh, I already played that this year. I'm trying to get through everything. But you're like, that's the thing that I really want to keep playing. So there's a little bit of that. Why we ever got up to that number, and like 300 is still a lot of games, but at that point you've also made a distinct space in wherever it is you live. And that might be the entire place, depending on where you live. It's like, yeah, I just put shelves on the wall. Now this is where my games are. Or a distinct area of your home, where it seems as though I've learned, to people that come by at that point where they might be surprised at how many games you have, but also it like stops really registering how many are there. Same way if someone had like a bookshelf full of books, you might not register like, oh, that's 700 books that they actually have on the wall there. It just becomes a lot of books. And then they're like, well, why don't you have more books? Is this all the books you have? It's like, isn't this enough books?
Right.
So yeah, there are people that came over and saw how many games you're getting rid of and were like, oh, why are you getting rid of so many games? And I was like, you've got to spin in a circle in the room you're in. There's still a lot of games in here. So like, yeah. When you do decide, because you are keeping it like 20 for sure, 30 as like a come and go, that's very different than me who's trying to keep it at 300. But it does feel like there's these kind of tiers of collection. I feel like we got to like around 100 and hovered there for a while. And we were, as we started getting into board games as a friend group, they were almost always happening at our house. So at Aaron's and I house, that's where we were gathering to play games. That also meant that if someone else had a game that was most likely to be played at our house versus anywhere else, maybe that was because of the play count. Maybe that's just because of the type of game it was. It was like a heavier game, so you're less likely to play it, you know, other places. Whatever the case may be, those games were also at our house. So we sort of had this artificial inflation of our collection, where we had a good number of games that weren't really our games, but they were at our house and then we could still like enjoy them. Now I ever wanted to play them two player, we could have. And that kind of made our collection grow beyond the things that we ourselves really wanted to keep. And there was a point maybe a couple years ago where I was like, everyone's got to take their games back, because we as a group, we weren't playing. We used to play together actually every Saturday, like literally every week. So one, we weren't playing together as often. And then two, as Aaron and I were still playing a lot together, we were finding that we wanted different games to play together, because it's just play count is a thing that kind of changes. Where you're going to play the most at a given play count could kind of dictate the games that you then want to keep and why. So then we were like, well, a lot of these games we don't actually are ever going to play even between the two of us. So that was kind of a rising of things. And throughout the pandemic, we were playing a bunch online, but that also meant that I was discovering new games. And as I discovered more games that I wanted to play, it was sort of like, oh, there's even more games. Even though we'd been playing games and been to game stores and all that stuff, it was also like, oh, I'm understanding better the games that I like and how many games out there I might like, which the number was high. So there was a big point of turnover. Like you talk about, well, I had this core 20, I've got these extra 10 that come and go. There was a point maybe more like 3 years ago that lasted for lasted for a while, where there's like kind of a line in the sand where there were games that we had before that. And even though we have more games we ever have, there were so many games that we got rid of in the intermediate because we sort of aged out or changed. A couple of those might wander back in because of the reason that we initially got rid of them. But like our collection turned over a lot. And in general, it turns over a lot. It's more than, because you're saying 30% of the games, 33% of the games that you have are kind of flexible. It's less, it's getting to be a smaller number that is changing like that. But there was a point there where the number was more like 90% was like, listen, it's going to come, it's going to go. We're like really switching things out. So yeah, I think now we're settling back into, no, these are the games that we really want. And I'm trying to get that number down lower and lower all the time, like really make sure that that number's good and maybe get to more of a similar ratio, because we do get a lot of games new every year. At Gen Con, we kind of see it as our buying convention because it's here local, and that's when a lot of games that have either come out in the last couple months or will come out for the next few months are available. And then just in the pure simplicity of, well, we don't have to have it shipped, everybody's here, and we can just throw it all in the car and drive it home, it makes a lot of sense to kind of consolidate around that for us since we're local. So that's kind of the idea here. And that's why I'm getting rid of so many games, because it started as, well, if we're going to play them all every year, I can't keep every game that I buy. And then also, as we're playing them more, it's like, oh, this, I'm quicker to know whether or not I really need to keep it and play it again. And I'd say there are still games that are like, oh, we're not getting rid of this game. And even with the games we're about to very quickly talk about, there's a few that I can see on the shelves now where it's like, yeah, you were close to being in that box. And right. Like another year might go by and not so sure. Yeah. Some of it will just be new additions and things like that. But
oh, for sure.
A lot of times it's like, no, now we've played this, it's time to move on, or this isn't actually going to be something that we play again, or it's not as good as we thought it was, or maybe we've kind of seen some crack or flaw with it. And there are some that you were kind of saying, oh, I grabbed this game to take somewhere else and lend someone to someone else. There's a little bit of that we keep. And there are some games where I'm like, I think it's a good game, but also I think it's not really the game for my collection. Like, I don't really need to keep it, even though it's all right. And it's sort of like, if I play that with someone and they like it, it's their game. Like, I'm just going to give it to them. Yeah.
For sure. I'm a big fan of, yeah, if just forwarding games on, and you're doing that in your own way. And
yeah,
I will say that's also, I think, I mean, I've sold games before, but pretty much anymore, it's just, I know people that are into games, and it's like, well, then they're just getting all the games I don't want. So they didn't know this, but they're now on that list of just, if they're local and they vaguely like games,
yeah,
they're going to get them all.
Yeah.
So,
and that's not to say, like, we're both kind of saying like, oh, to manage the selling of games, because when you buy a game, like, I just see it, I buy a game new, I see it as like the same as someone else might see as an evening out, whatever they go out and do, yep, and spend. Well, I've spent that on a game and I spend the evening playing the game, and I'm kind of okay with that being like a ticket to a show, so to speak, where the ticket price was the playing it. And even though it can be played again, I'm not obligated to do that just for the money that I spent. But that means, yeah, that you could resell it, get a lot of that value back. And there are good ways to do that. There's like communities, for sure, on BoardGameGeek itself, on eBay. Local stores sometimes have ways that you can sell games to them and sell used games. Kind of just depends on where you are. There are options for that, and they aren't really as tedious as I made it out to sound when I said I didn't do any of it. Like, what's nice is the person who's interested in games, who then buys your used game, is going to get some kind of discount on it. They're going to get a basically new thing, and they're going to, yep, be able to spend a little less money. And they also can still sell it as a game that's now been played twice and, yep, get a lot of money back. So it is a way to invest less into the hobby as a whole. You don't have to see it as like the same way you would entertainment, a night out kind of entertainment. You can be playing through a lot of board games for a pretty small budget every month, or however you want to look at it.
Absolutely. You're right. You and I kind of have a specific approach, but there's lots of options out there, and every store is a little bit different, but they're pretty much all happy to take your games from you for, yeah, some system or something.
Yeah. So. And I've heard there are like school game clubs that you can sometimes donate to if you also do want to donate but don't have a local con. I've heard that some libraries, that's just going to depend on where you are. Some libraries now will rent out board games and will therefore take board game donations too.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, probably because you play like coffee shops or places like that, mm-hmm, bars maybe even will have like sometimes a handful of games.
Yeah.
We could probably guess the five games that are at every one, yep, of those places.
Yep.
But I'm sure if you said, hey, I think it's cool you have these, can I throw three more in the stack for other people to get into this? I mean, you know,
yeah,
maybe don't set down Twilight Imperium. You
seems
know, whatever.
Unlikely.
But like, if it's like a simple kind of a game, like that seems pretty cool, right? You know, plant the seeds of the tree that you'll never sit under, or whatever is the phrase. So,
oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. So it's, yeah,
that's a real for the generations thought. I was thinking of there's a Kung Fu Tea. So that's like a bubble tea chain. There's a Kung Fu Tea near me, and they have this shelf, and it says like games And it's, you know, it's cute. Like, you can come in there and get your tea and play a game. Yeah. They have very small tables. And there's like four sad games on that shelf. But at the same time, like, and I could obviously take some of this, a handful of these games, and take them there. But I never see anyone sitting in this place either. So again, it doesn't matter because you just put the games there, and you don't know who's there when you're not there. But I'm also like, I think I'm going to give them to the board game convention.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
But yeah, I think at the coffee shop that we often go to, there's no game shelf, but it kind of feels like, I mean, how many more coffees would we have to drink to be like, so we brought a shelf. And right. We're just going to leave these here, if that's fine.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I've left that Atomic Habits book at Airbnbs, at places. Like, I'll just put it.
People where, if should there's other know.
Books, yeah, just sprinkle that right on in there. It's a good book.
We've left games at because sometimes Airbnbs have games as well.
Yeah.
And it's pretty common that when we get an Airbnb, like, one of the benefits of getting an Airbnb while traveling is that you don't have just a hotel room. You're very likely to have like a table, a place where you can play games. And so we will take things we haven't played, play them while we're at the Airbnb, and then we tend to leave the game that we don't think we're gonna play again. I know we left, and it's a good game, but we're just like, oh, this isn't the game for our collection. Wicked and Wise was one that we left at an Airbnb. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
There's been maybe, like, we were kind of going on a string where it was happening every time. The one we just stayed at, they didn't have any games already, but we also did not leave one, which is kind of like, we were there for a board game convention, but no, we didn't have anything extra. We didn't leave anything there.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, lots of ways to get rid of a game.
Yes.
So there's good system there.
And that, you know, a lot of the games, as we're about to talk about right now, is we're going to kind of do a rapid fire, go down the whole list of games. There's a lot of different reasons to get rid of them. And it's rarely that I'm getting rid of a game that I think no one else will like, that it's like just like a truly awful game. In fact, a lot of the games I'm getting rid of, I even like. But I have definitely surpassed the number of how many games I like. That's a higher number than how many games I want to keep. And I know the same is true for you. I know you like more than 20, 30 games.
Sure,
but
do.
That's beyond the number that you're willing to actually keep. So,
correct.
How we're going to go through this list is Adam's going to read them off. I am going to say the reason for that game as one word, pretty much one word, as to why I decided to get rid of it. Those reasons are going to be one of four. And some of them might have more than one reason. I'm going to pick one of the reasons. It's going to be multiple, and that will be that there's a new edition or we have multiple copies of that game for some reason. The next option is meh, and that means that either only one of us liked it, maybe neither of us really liked it, or we just didn't see ourselves playing it as much as the other games we were keeping. Play count, that's going to be that we didn't like how it played at two. Now, there are some games that we do still keep that are three or more players, but it's getting really hard to do that. Yeah. And some of the games come out, like Prince of Florence came out with the newer edition where the old one said 3+. I think the new one goes down to 1. And sometimes those versions did already exist in some form and they just weren't printed on the box. So there's that. So there might be some of those that I say play count for that they actually do have. It's not actually just a 3-player game. But also sometimes we play it at 2 and we're just like, oh, this game just isn't very good at 2 players. At least not good for us. And then the last reason will be digital. And that means a digital version exists that I could play instead. That may or may not be better than the physical one. Sometimes that's just the dividing line of if I'm going to keep this or not. When I know I maybe already own, if it's actually an app, already own a digital version of it. Or I know I can access it digitally somehow. That could be on BGA as well. And I think, well, on BGA is going to be good enough for this. And if it got taken off of BGA, like I also wouldn't be heartbroken, you know, and be like, I can't believe I don't have a copy anymore. So it'll be one of those four options: multiple, meh, play count, or digital. I think I'm going to start a timer and see how fast we can go through them.
Okay.
When you start with the first game, I'm going to hit start and we're going to see how quickly we can do this.
Dragon Castle.
Digital.
Hans Teutonica.
Play count.
Unmatched.
Meh.
Super Skill Pinball Holiday.
Meh.
Explorers.
Digital.
Lotus.
Meh.
Biblios Roll and Write.
Meh.
Garden Nation.
Meh. It's a lot of meh.
Istanbul Big Box.
Multiple.
Lacrimosa.
Meh.
Junk Orbit.
Multiple.
Sea of Clouds.
Meh.
Draftosaurus.
Digital.
Trek 12.
Digital.
Momiji.
Meh.
Airship City.
Play Count.
Carcassonne.
Multiple.
Explore and Draw.
That's Isle of Cats. Explore and Draw. Meh.
Battle Line.
Meh.
Camel Up the Card Game.
Meh.
Bargain Quest.
Meh.
Tussy Mussy.
Meh.
Dead Man's Doubloons.
Meh.
Creature Comforts.
Meh.
Pina Pirata.
Meh.
Finished.
Meh.
Number Drop.
Digital.
Walking in Burano.
Reluctant. Meh.
Castles of Burgundy Dice.
Meh.
Lanterns Dice.
Meh.
Palm Island.
Meh. Meh is getting really weird to say.
Bog Chal.
Meh.
Rolling Ranch.
Meh.
Hex Roller.
Digital.
My City.
Meh. That's My City Roll and Write.
Okay. Fantasy Realms.
Multiple.
Valamino.
Meh.
Fika.
Meh.
Ex Libris.
Multiple.
Lord of the Rings Adventure of Mount Doom.
So much meh.
Roller Coaster Rush.
Meh.
Maracaibo and Expansion.
Digital.
Tiny Towns.
Meh.
Planted.
Meh.
Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion.
Meh.
Pie Town.
Meh.
Marvel Dice Throne.
Meh.
Kingdom Hearts.
Perilous Pursuit.
Pursuit.
Oh, so mediocre.
Turing Machine.
Digital.
Ready, Set, Bet.
Meh.
Wayfinders.
Meh. Barely.
Shake That City.
Meh.
Old West Impresario.
Meh.
Paper Tales.
Digital.
Port Royal.
Meh.
Wild Style.
Meh.
Unlock.
You know what? There's another category. Finished. It's like a puzzle thing.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Greed.
Meh.
Welcome to.
Multiple.
Acropolis.
Meh.
Top Race.
Multiple. This is Downforce. It's the original version of Downforce.
Hmm. Okay. Puerto Rico.
Multiple.
Castles of Burgundy.
Multiple.
San Francisco.
Meh.
Isle of Skye.
Play Count.
Dragon Castle.
Play Count. Digital, but Play Count. It only took us 4 minutes because it did pay. Yeah. It pasted it twice. Oh,
gotcha.
Boy.
Yeah.
Okay. I was spot on.
Yourself.
Yeah. I was so surprised. And as I scrolled through them, because I only could see, I couldn't even see 60 on my screen at once.
Right.
So they just,
always unique
they just,
60.
They, every screen that I saw was different games. Oh, I'm relieved because I was like, I did not think it was that many games. Wow. Finding out in real time. So there were a lot that did hit the, because I didn't actually do this first. I just figured these were the categories, and there's actually one more with the unlock one. Kind of the same as, micro macro would be the same way, where it's just like, well, I'm just done. And technically I could do it again, but you know, it's more of a one and pass it on sort of thing. Yeah, there were a lot. There were maybe more meh than I expected. And sometimes the mehs would blur into Play Count. Because we didn't necessarily.
And the meh just could also be that something else, like Ready, Set, Bet. What's the other one that you liked better than Ready, Set, Bet?
Yeah, similar, same theme, Long Shot the Dice Game.
Right. So I think things like that were like Ready, Set, Bet is fine, but sometimes you stumble across like, oh, given the choice. They used to make those books, right? Like not this, but that.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that same concept of like, oh, this might be fine, but I found this other thing and therefore it's only meh because I know about this thing.
Yeah. And one that I actually am going to throw in there that I don't think we said that fit that exactly. We talked about it on a previous podcast was Rolling Japan because it's a roll and write game and it's supposed to be a map of Japan, but very abstractly. So you just have boxes that are next to one another and you're filling in numbers and the numbers that you fill in can only be, they have to be within one of the box next to it, of all the boxes that are touching it next to it. So that's the, okay, that's the puzzle of the game. You're rolling dice to get these numbers and then you're trying to fit them into these boxes the best you can without forcing yourself to eliminate boxes because you've put like a 5, a space, and then a 3. And it's, or a 5, that would actually work. If you put a 5 and a 2, well, there's no number you can put in between there that's going to be one away from both of them.
Oh, gotcha.
So okay. That's the puzzle of the game. And French Quarter, which is the new game in the Motor City kind of GameWorks line of roll-and-writes, it does that same thing. It does a whole lot more. It's doing all kinds of other things as well, but it does that same thing of, oh, you have to be one away, and they, of course, have ways to mitigate it and little things that you can do, which is also true in Rolling Japan. But having it in another game, I was like, I don't need two games that do this, and I like this one. I like this one better. I think the Ready, Set, Bet, I'm not necessarily into real-time betting games. I think I'm not enough into betting in real life to even like it as a board game. I think it's a cool concept, and that also isn't one that is great at two-player. You can have, there's an app where it can call the race for you, and I think that's probably what you would have to do. Yeah, I think you'd have to do that because there'd be no way for...
It's just one person yelling horse names to the other person, right?
Right. Like it's just, I guess you could just go back and forth trying to win the most money. But right. I don't even know the mechanics would work that well that way because someone else is meant to be blocking things off for you. So yeah, there's a lot of games in there that really, as we were building up to this number, I wouldn't have gotten rid of. If I today was at 100 games and there were these 60, there aren't a lot of them that I would still say, no, go ahead and get rid of them. But I've kind of put that line at 300, which I'm going to take these out of Board Game Geek and see where I'm actually at. Because as there's some exceptions, because you talked about like, oh, these are permanent collection games. I don't quite have that in the sense of the game itself, but there are some that I'm kind of saying like collector status. There's IP games that I keep, not really because they're any good. Honestly, one of the worst games ever that I think that I've ever tried to play is the Good Omens game, which came out recently. I mean, somewhat recently. It has the cover from it has the actors from the show on it. It's for a kind of like mini series show that's on Amazon Prime. It's based on a book from the 90s. It's just card games, and they just give you a deck of cards and maybe like some dice and some stuff. And the book just has a lot of different versions of games you can play with this deck of cards, the way that you can always play games with a deck of cards. Right. And right. It is just complete. We slapped pictures on it and sold it to you in a box. And they even put it in 3 different boxes. And the worst part is, like, I don't like the game at all. I am going to keep it. I've considered buying it in different boxes because all I'm doing with it is putting it on a shelf. It's the same as buying wall art at this point. And it's not that much more expensive than wall art because it's not a well-made game, really. So I have things like that. That's the most like egregious example, but I have some things like that that I'm not keeping them because they're good games. I'm keeping them for some other reason. I have some Doctor Who games that are that way. I have like a small, I'm not buying all of the Doctor Who games because they're making too many, but I have like a small collection that's just Doctor Who games. I have a small and growing collection of ones that are based on video games or somehow like tied in with video games like Stardew Valley and Skyrim. Not all of the Elder Scrolls games, because again, they started making too many of them with too many minis in them as well to be keeping all of them. But I have more of that sense, but I think maybe still in my head there is probably a short list of permanent collection games that I can't imagine my game collection getting like as it got smaller and smaller. Like, I just don't think certain ones are gonna budge.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that makes sense, at least with what we know about the world in the future. I mean, I guess that could change if
they think
come out with the greatest games ever.
Right. It's like, well, the games after 2027 were fundamentally
crazy. Right.
They were fundamentally different than everything before, and there was just no turning back. Yeah, I think more of them now would be probably 2-player games than in the past, just because, like, well, I'm not only am I very likely to play it with one other person, and I feel like I'm almost opposite you with party games. I'm more likely to play it with only one person, and I only have to find one other person to play that game. I also have a pretty big solo shelf, and that was a driving thing for a while because I just didn't know you could do solo games, and I like puzzles. Like, I'll get a penny press puzzle book and have myself a time. So I like the idea of, like, getting something just to sit down by myself, spend time by myself thinking, like, that is a good day. But I'm also realizing that there are some solo games, as they are really big, I don't necessarily prefer them, like the amount of admin you have to do to get them out and then to execute the gameplay of them. When I still like puzzle books, it's kind of like, well, I don't know that actually my mind is fundamentally being challenged in a way that I couldn't just get out of a puzzle book. So now I'm kind of seeing, like, oh, I don't know that I actually like big, huge solo games, because there's only so many of them, like maybe a couple, but there's only so many of them that I actually would dedicate that time to. And it's sort of like, if I have that kind of big time, I might want to give that to a video game, which is, for me, I don't really play like online multiplayer games. That would also be a big solo experience, or just doing puzzles that would be much easier to get out, be interrupted by, take somewhere else, and not kind of, that might change a little bit. I've thought about getting a board game table for years, and I might be getting closer to that now. How could I not be? I'm still into board games. I found out about a place that's in Indiana, or a company that's in Indiana, maybe Amish. There's a lot of Amish in Indiana doing woodwork. And so I'm thinking, like, that might be a little bit of a push that I could get one locally made instead of having it shipped from who knows where. But in any case, maybe getting something big like that out and feeling like I'd be able to come back to it, because we just have one table. We don't, like, have a different board game table somewhere else. It's separate than our kitchen table where we eat and do everything else. So, yeah, maybe if I had that I'd feel a little better about getting some big one-player game out and knowing that I could kind of come back to it, hit a stopping point. But what you really think that you will play and enjoy and like, and you might go from really liking heavy luck games to finding strategy games you really like, and then being like, you know, I kind of, actually the strategies become more fun than just seeing what happens with the luck. Aaron identified that I don't like, that me, not him, that I am not really a fan of high luck, high variance games. If it's going to be high luck, I kind of want the score to always end up sort of close.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But when it's like high luck and it's like, well, I have 100 points and you have 7. It's like, well, what did we do here? Right. Like, it's it's too random. And it's like, then it doesn't pull together as an experience for me if it's that just off the wall.
That's fair. I would say that I will keep a game more likely if it is easy to relearn. Because some games, I'm more likely to have something on the shelf that may sit there for a while. If the first time I learn it, I'm like, well, I'm never going to learn this again. So I'm going to have to get rid of it because I'm never going to read this rule book again. This is awful. Like, so I will say games kind of get a rough, like, that first time through better be good. Like,
your first impression
with that game. Otherwise, I'm not doing it again.
That makes sense, because you could also say if it was a game that it was hard to learn and you played it and loved it, you could say that, like, oh, I'm just going to play this game a lot, and the rules will, you know, cement themselves into me. But I don't think that's as likely, especially, I think that's one of Aaron's bigger complaints about us playing every game every year, is that I think that I am growing in my capacity to remember and recall games. Just like your brain, when you keep doing something, it will be like, okay, this is important to you. I guess we'll remember this instead of that other thing. But I think I'm getting better at retaining more rules to things and relearning things faster, like being able to get through a rule book faster is just more practice with them. But that is probably the most difficult thing about having this many games. And sometimes there's actually two big Uwe Rosenberg games, Hallertau and Fields of Arles. And they're both on the line because I just played one of his games. It was something completely different. It wasn't anything that big, but I was, it's the same thing with the rule book. Something about the way that the rule books tend to be written for his games tend to be real difficult for me and especially Aaron. Cause I told him like, oh, it's that same guy. Oh, it was New York Zoo. And it's not as heavy of a game, but they're still like, you're putting these animals out and then they are moving around and mating. And for whatever reason, I was just like, what is happening? And I told Aaron, I'm like, oh, it's that same guy from the other rule books. And he was like, oh, he was basically like, get rid of that game. I don't even want to read that rule book. Like, I'm not even interested. So yeah, that is a big, that, cause that's the upfront cost you have to play before you can have fun, is that you have to get through the rule book again. And if you like party games, now one, they usually don't have hard rules because party.
You gotta get 13 people to learn that game. So right. They know.
But sometimes, like, there's, I mean, I don't think the rules for, I don't know that the rules for Blood on the Cock Tower is hard. But there are big game, like, there are big games that use a lot of people that, like.
Mansions of Madness is one of those two where there's a lot going on sometimes. You can have 10 people playing or whatever. So.
Right. But that's another thing where if the, what you want to do, or if you're more likely to be introducing new people to games and you're more likely to like take a game to like a new or different group all the time, either you kind of want to have the teach of it down so that as the person insisting on this for the group or introducing it to the group, you kind of want to have it down to make it a smooth experience. You can just get to playing. So I can also see that being a reason why if your game group, that's one of the things my sister says. They're my way more casual game players. And she has some people that she plays with, but none of them are into, like, they drop out. They're not into, like, a big rule book. And we have some friends that are getting more into gaming, and they have been saying for a while, like, oh, we have Wingspan. And we saw the rule book, and we have not played Wingspan. And we went to watch a video, and the video was a half hour. And so we have not played Wingspan. So we've told them, like, we're gonna come play Wingspan and just, cause it's not necessarily that hard when you've played it. Like, when I think back on it, it's like, no, you kind of just putting out birds and getting eggs.
Right, birds and eggs, that's all it is.
But from zero, and when you're not playing many other games, if all of the concepts they're introducing are new, then yeah, that's a big ask just to sit down to have fun to try to get through some of those bigger rule books.
Cryptid was a game recently that had that same problem, I think. No, the rule book was atrocious.
It's not a big game. It's a very small game.
It's very small, and I'm going to say a very simple game. Yeah. And I remember even, as I'm reading out loud the rule book, I'm like, this is a terrible rule book. Like, I just, like, I think I said it out loud, like, no, right. This is... We have to read it, because I can't just guess which lines are important or not. Right. Like, I don't know yet. Right. At the end of this, though, I'll know what's important, and it's not most of the stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's not always, I think what we're both saying is, it's not always the game itself that is getting itself into the coal pile. Like, it might not literally be the gameplay. I was kind of saying, well, play count, it can just get it over there. It doesn't matter how good or bad of a game it is sometimes. It's just like, well, it's not a play count that we're going to play enough to keep. And then, yeah, you open the box in the rule books. I think not very often, but there was a, I can't remember what it was. There was a game that we got rid of because the components were just like so bad. It was like, you don't even want me to play this game. You didn't even, and I get like, because you could see an extremism of like all the Kickstarter stuff, which I have bought, where it's like, well, this is, and I don't do it as much anymore because it's kind of getting ridiculous to me. Like, why is everything filled with metal? Like, this is, it's a bit much. It's a board
solid
game.
Rhodium pieces are a little much, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of a balance to it where when it gets too nice, it kind of feels like, okay, what are we doing here? If this is not like the one prize game of my collection, it's overproduced in a way that doesn't really make a lot of sense. But on the other end of that, if it's like, I can't shuffle these cards because they all stick together because they're just, this is just regular paper. I'm not a card producer. Like, I don't actually know how to better describe what was so wrong about it. But I was like, I can't shuffle these cards. And it's telling me I need to shuffle these cards like every other turn. So
I can see the lines. This is loose leaf paper.
Yeah.
That someone bought and just wrote on. Yeah.
And I'm not like some things now, again, at this point in board game and being a board game hobbyist. Now I might buy sleeves for something. And so you could, like, I could have bought sleeves for that game, but then you're investing even more
right
into that game that they didn't invest into it because they could have just put it on decent card stock.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the game might be great. You can even do like print and play stuff where very often that's what you're doing. You might print it out, cut it, and then be putting it into sleeves and stuff yourself.
And love the idea. I'll never do it.
There are great print and play games that get made into actual games. I'm pretty sure Bargain Basement Bathysphere. I haven't bought the actual game. I think it's a little different than the one that was the print and play, but I did print that one out during the pandemic. I think Jason has my binder for that one. And Under Falling Skies, I think, was originally a print and play game.
I can see that, yeah.
And it's great. So yeah, there are some games that are great that you could print out and whatever, but yeah, it's another kind of level of investment. So yeah, sometimes if a game requires another level of investment for you to really feel like I'm gonna play it, and that might be time investment for the rules, might be monetary investment to like organize the box. Sometimes things people will say about game organizers that you can buy that go inside the box that keep everything separate, that it actually ends up having them play the game more because they open the box and everything's already ready to go. Instead of needing to take a half hour to sort things back out and make sure everything's the right play count. That's certainly something we do more often now. A lot of our games are just set up for two or maybe one. If it's usually a one, if it's just me playing it, everything's put away for the two player game. And then like the three and four additional players are kind of set off to the side where they'd have to be added back in, because that's going to be the quickest experience for us to actually get the game from the shelf to being played.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, we did it. These games are all getting boxed up. They actually are already boxed. They're getting taped up and delivered, I think, tomorrow. It has cleared out enough space. If you know you're going to buy games every year at a certain time for us, Gen Con, it's cleared out an amount of space where I feel like, okay, I can come in with the Gen Con purchases later this year, and they will immediately have a place to go.
Oh, that's nice.
Instead of it being sort of we'll tuck this here, we'll just push that there. There's a little space next to the couch, stack things up.
Right.
There's actually blank shelves in the collection. And I'd like to get it further. We'll see in the next couple months as we play things again. It might be when you play every year, that's another like, yeah, I'm not playing this next year. Like,
right, boom. For sure.
2024, that was it. It had a good run.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, we'll see. I've now started breaking up sets of games because sometimes, you know, it's all the same game. And you, like, it's all the same box sizes or a series of games. And you think, like, I'm going to keep the whole series. It's like, well, there's two of them I hate, but look how the boxes are the same size.
Right. Yeah. It makes the whole spectrum of the rainbow.
It's pleasing. Yeah. Now I'm just going to go from orange to green.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense. It's like a science.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 141. Be sure to subscribe so when new episodes drop. You can follow us on Instagram, X, and Twitch at Variant Hex. We have a website and a blog at varianthex.com, and you can email us at podcast@varianthex.com. Just one editing note here at the end. You heard us realize in real time how many games we were actually talking about because I had double-pasted some of the games in the list to add them before recording. I edited around our chat the best I could, so in case you were wondering, that's what happened. The next episode will be about the local board game convention that Aaron and I attended, unless you're listening to these in reverse, in which case you have 140 more episodes headed your way, the next one being us talking about a non-local convention, Dice Tower West 2024. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for spending your time with us today.